Hi, Matt here. We're excited to celebrate a milestone. Think Fast, Talk Smart is approaching our 300th episode. To mark the occasion, I'll be hosting two free Ask Matt Anything events on June 3rd at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. Pacific. We'll run these on LinkedIn and YouTube, open to everyone around the globe. Before taking your questions, I'll share one of my favorite new communication structures for advancing ideas and arguments. Anyone joining can submit questions online during the event, and a few of our learning community members will have the opportunity to ask me their questions live on video. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of this live AMA on June 3rd. Be sure to sign up on LinkedIn, YouTube, or fastersmarter.io/live. Now a word from one of our sponsors. Their support covers the cost of production, allowing us to bring you quality content free of charge. Language isn't just about words. It's about connection, opportunity, and credibility. That's one reason I like Babbel. It focuses on real-world communication, not just vocabulary drills, but practical conversations you can actually use, whether that's collaborating internationally, traveling for work, or building relationships across cultures. The lessons are short, about 10 minutes, so they fit into busy schedules, and they're designed by more than 200 language experts with tools for listening, speaking, reading, and writing. It adapts to how you learn and helps you track real progress over time. For many of our listeners, whether you're strengthening English skills, adding another language for professional growth, or staying connected globally, it's a practical way to keep moving forward. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, offers 14 languages, and every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. If you've ever thought about learning another language, this is a perfect opportunity to start. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 60% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, BABBEL.com/TFTS for up to 60% off. Rules and restrictions apply. While most communication situations are not life and death, sometimes they can be. We can all learn to handle the pressure when under the gun. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. As part of our four-part mini-series on spontaneous speaking, we introduced you to a number of coaches whose jobs require successful in-the-moment communication. So many of our listeners found value in our coaches' advice that we wanted to provide you with an opportunity to hear our complete interviews. So today I'm excited for you to learn from Chris Voss. Chris is a former FBI lead international kidnapping and hostage negotiator. He is the CEO of the Black Swan Group and co-author of Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Let's jump right in and learn from Chris. Chris, welcome. I look forward to our conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, so do I. Let's go on an exploration here.
All right. So for over 20 years, you were a lead FBI hostage negotiator. What trainings and experience led you into that role?
When I specifically began to train for it was when I volunteered on a crisis/suicide hotline in New York City. I was told the best preparation was to volunteer on a suicide hotline, and as it turned out, that was the case. And then after that, you go to the FBI's two-week school at Quantico. If you're a hostage negotiator anywhere on Earth, the training at Quantico is one of the trainings you want to go to. And I loved it, and I stayed volunteering on the crisis hotline for a couple more years after that, and I did a lot of teaching, but a lot of it is then self-directed and recognizing that it's a perishable skill and not letting it perish.
What were one or two of the key things you learned from the work you did with the suicide hotline and maybe even Quantico? What were a couple of the skills they taught you that you think were invaluable to the role you have?
What I learned was emotional intelligence is an insane accelerator to outcomes. You know, we speculate that the application of empathy accelerates you to wherever you're going to go 14 times faster. And I kind of got an inkling of that on a suicide hotline when they first said there's a 20-minute time limit on all calls. Like, you got to be kidding me. There are anecdotal stories all the time of people being on a phone overnight, staying up all night trying to talk people out of kidding themselves. How can you do this in 20 minutes? And they said, well, as a matter of fact, if you're doing it right, it won't take that long. And that ended up being the case. And, you know, I learned emotional intelligence. They called it reflective listening at the time. This is early 1990s. It's derivative of a psychologist named Carl Rogers. But I remember using it on the hotline thinking, like, if this is this effective with people in crisis, why doesn't everybody in my life discern it? Why don't my family, my friends, my colleagues, people I arrest deserve empathy as an FBI agent? And in point of fact, I started applying it on everything that I did.
You know, you've negotiated in incredibly high-pressure situations where life is on the line. How do you stay calm and collected?
You know, anything that looks easy, that somebody makes look easy, they put a lot of time into. Now, I really started on the suicide hotline. They would put us on the lines while we were still in training. About halfway through training, they taught us enough to put us on the line supervised. There's somebody right there. Take the phone out of your hand if you start saying stupid stuff to the person on the other end, which is entirely possible because advice is usually counterproductive. It short circuits their thinking process. So the first time that I was on the line, I remember saying, "Hello, this is Helpline." Just like that. And a supervisor said, "Your tone of voice is great. That was great." And so I thought, okay, well, I got to repeat that. You break it down into small pieces. You practice it live, and then you practice it in small stakes interactions. I mean, I got to practice these skills today. It's not bike riding. I got to practice every day or my skills deteriorate.
So it's the notion of practice and finding opportunities that are low stakes to really work on that and to keep those skills fresh. And it sounds like, at least early on, you had a direct mentor sitting there giving you feedback and advice as you went. And that's also important, I believe. Before you go into a negotiation or a high-stakes situation like that, do you do anything to prepare yourself? Do you do some deep breathing, some centering? What do you do to prepare when you walk into one of these situations?
I do a sort of daily prep because I never know when a high-pressure situation is going to come at me. So the cliches, the gratitude exercise first thing in the morning, the phraseology that, you know, this is happening for me, not to me, calms you down in the moment. You got to practice that. When I was as a hostage negotiator, I had just relied on the process so much that I was good. You know, I don't know for sure how this is going to come out, but the best outcome is if I just follow the process that I know, you know, use the skills and let it go where it may.
So it sounds like there was a bit of a ritual to your practice. It sounds like you continue that practice, but it's really about relying on what you have done and know that you can get through it. When you're under pressure, how do you quickly gather information and adjust your approach? I mean, you constantly must be reading the circumstances and then making adjustments. Do you have things you use to help you make those decisions, or are you using some kind of pattern recognition?
Your gut does the pattern recognition. It's not a conscious process. So when you get to the point where you can lean back enough to let your gut kick in, then you're going to be fine.
Many of us in these high-stakes situations, clearly different than the high-stakes situations you've lived through, we get in our head and we overthink. Do you have ways that help you turn down that volume of overthinking?
I'm reading Creativity, Inc. by Ed Catmull, the guy who founded Pixar. And he says, you know, the overthinkers make mistakes at the same rate as the people that are quick to pull the trigger. It just takes them longer to make the mistakes because they're overthinking it. And I thought, that makes all the sense in the world. You know, the entrepreneurial organizations who are really operating on gut instinct, they say, you know, make the mistake now, gather the data, fail fast, move forward. You see it over and over and over again. And it never even occurred to me that the overthinkers would not be any more effective than the quick to pull the trigger. It would just take them longer. And that insight in Ed's book just really sort of opened my eyes to the dangers, the perils of overthinking.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. When things don't go as you expected them to go in the moment, are there ways in which you quickly adjust and adapt, or do you just stay the course and keep things going forward even if it didn't happen or occur the way you wanted it to? What do you do when things don't go the way you planned?
The first thing is to realize there is no course. If you only imagine there's one course, then you're going to stick to it when all the data is telling you you're wrong. So in kidnap negotiations, I'd show up at an embassy and they'd say, how's this going to work out? And it's going to work out one of five ways. And we got to go along for the ride, see which one it is. You know, that would keep me from getting married to a course. So to recognize that it's your desire to want to think of one path, you're already limiting yourself, because never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better. If you can maintain that flexibility in a moment, then you're going to do really well.
I think that is such important advice and insight, that there is no one right way. There are many ways, and staying open and agile and curious is what allows you to adjust and adapt as things happen.
Amen.
What rules or guidelines do you follow in your messaging when you communicate in negotiations?
Yeah, in general terms, you know, he or she who talks most loses. If you're explaining, you're losing. You should probably be listening five times more when you're talking.
Right. And it's really about the understanding that what you are saying or not saying has an impact in that moment on what's going on. I'd like to get into, if you don't mind, sharing some more detail about two specific skills that you mentioned earlier. You mentioned labeling and you mentioned mirroring. Would you mind taking a moment to just share what each of those skills are and the value they bring to you in the work that you do?
The value I bring?
Yeah, the value of labeling and of mirroring.
All right, so I just mirrored you.
And I felt right for it.
Well, because it feels natural. Mirroring is a delightful skill, which is repeating generally the last 1 to 3-ish words of what somebody has said. It could be one word. It really shouldn't be more than five. And it's just repeating them word for word. And in any given communication, and you touched on it a little bit before, you know, what's said, what's unsaid. And the other side, what they hear is, oh, okay, he got what I wanted to say, but he needs a fuller explanation. And so you're drawn to it and you give fuller explanations. It's actually much more effective than saying to somebody, what did you mean by that? It doesn't require a lot of mental energy. The return of investment of what you said versus how much you hear is insane. And that's why they like it. Because I just got to say 3 words and the other side will talk for 10 minutes. Now, the label is just slapping a label on the dynamic or the emotion or a hidden dynamic. Again, I'm coaching a client earlier and they got a vendor that they're dealing with who's going to make all kinds of excuses for why they couldn't get stuff done. And I said, well, the label here is, it sounds like you're telling me you're incompetent. And it's got to be delivered just like that. I hesitated. You know, I did an upward inflection. What are you telling me? If you're a professional and you agreed on a job and then you came back afterwards with all kinds of excuses, somewhere along the line, what you're telling me is you didn't know what you were doing. And the important thing about a label is it's got to be a dynamic the other side introduces. You cannot introduce it. The other side has to introduce it. Then it's fair game.
What's interesting to me, I mean, you did a great job describing it, so I don't feel like I have to re-explain it. But what's interesting to me is how important the way in which you say your mirror or label plays out in it. So it's not just the words, it's the way you say those words. So that combination of nonverbal presence and the verbal presence matter in this. And a lot of us fixate on just the words. And what I'm hearing you say is it's much more than that.
Being in law enforcement, then I'm always going to come up with law enforcement analogies. And so tone is like the rifling on a bullet. Now, a bullet comes out of a barrel, and there are things inside of the barrel of a gun called lands and grooves that actually spin the bullet so that when it comes out, it goes in a straight line. It's the same thing as when you throw a baseball, you spin the ball. A baseball pitch with no spin is called a knuckleball, and that thing goes all over the place, and nobody knows where the hell it's going to land. And so for your words to hit the target, you know, the very label I used before, I could say, it sounds like you're telling me you're incompetent. Now, that's an insult. That tone of voice is an accusation. It's insulting. But if I say, it sounds like you're telling me you're incompetent, same words.
Right.
Land 1,000% different.
One of the things, Chris, I'm really appreciating is you've done a really nice job of using analogies, and analogies are really useful. While I don't know much about guns and bullets, it's very clear that spin matters.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, a quick word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you this show free of charge. When things get busy, and they always do, the real challenge is focus. Knowing where to spend your time so you actually make meaningful progress. But that's hard when you're trying to do everything yourself. That's where Upwork can help. Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across areas like marketing, development, data and analytics, and more. It gives you fast access to specialized talent so you can move quickly, fill key gaps, and keep your work moving forward without getting stuck. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping your project so you can hire with confidence and get started faster. And if speed really matters, you can connect with top-tier talent and get matched in under 6 hours. It's a simple way to maintain momentum and focus on what matters most. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. If you think about it, a lot of our communication challenges at work aren't about what we say. They're about what never gets clearly shared in the first place, especially as teams grow and change. Processes live in people's heads, explanations vary, and over time, that leads to confusion and inconsistency. This is exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500, Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures what you're doing in real time and automatically turns it into clear, step-by-step guides. No recording, no manual write-ups. So instead of adding one more task to your to-do list, you can just do your work knowing it's being documented for others. As our team has grown, we've spent a lot of time walking people through onboarding, tool transitions, and cross-team workflows. And the reality is, we're often just too busy to stop and properly document all of it. With Scribe, you just turn on the extension, go through the process, and it builds the guide as you go. Something that might take hours or get pushed aside entirely now takes seconds. It also automatically redacts sensitive information so you can share confidently across teams, contractors, and new hires. And anyone following along gets real-time on-screen guidance. So the message isn't just sent, it's actually understood and applied. And what I really appreciate is that Scribe doesn't just document your processes, it helps you improve them by showing you where things could be more consistent, more efficient, and easier to hand off. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/thinkfast. That's scribe.how/thinkfast. And now, back to our conversation.
So before we end, I'd like to ask you three questions that I'm asking everybody who's part of this mini-series on spontaneous speaking. Are you up for doing that?
Let's go for it. See All what right. happens.
Chris, I'd love to know, who is a communicator you admire and why?
Oprah Winfrey.
Tell me why.
So she has dealt with some of the most volatile people on planet Earth. I've had some very specific conversations relayed to me in detail where she has taken celebrities to the woodshed over their behavior. I mean, she has the ability to maintain relationships even with differences of opinion. I'm a big fan. I'm a huge fan.
Question number two. While those listening in likely aren't going to have to speak in situations like you do, what advice would you give for them to speak better in the moment in general?
Just take your time. There's so much of an advantage. While you're speaking, to slow down a little, you know, let the moment play out. Some people take their time in speaking because they're determined to maintain control of the conversation. They'll only pause mid-sentence so they don't get interrupted. So slowing the conversation down so you can absorb more information, so you can be more in the moment, is not the same as slowing down to stay in control. If you slow down to be more connected with somebody in the moment, to hear them, to make them feel heard, you give yourself time to analyze in the moment, you're going to be a much better communicator.
This notion of pausing and slowing things down, I think, is really, really important. I want to add an exclamation point to that. In these spontaneous speaking situations, we feel such pressure to respond immediately. And you remind us that slowing down actually affords us lots of opportunity. Final question for you. I want to switch roles on you. I'm the professor, but I'm going to have you be the professor. I'd like you to give me some homework. What is one communication thing that you would encourage me to do in my life that simulates the things that you do so I can get better, in your case, with negotiations and handling high-pressure situations? Is there one thing you'd give me homework to practice?
Spend a day with whatever somebody says to you. Say, seems like you have a reason for saying that. Somebody says, hey, man, what a sunny day. Seems like you got a reason for saying that. Somebody says to you, you know, if you don't vote for so-and-so, you're betraying the American people. Seems like you got a reason for saying that. Just give yourself a day to experiment with that phrase, no matter what people say. You can come back with your opinion, your observation. It doesn't preclude you from any of the natural things you want to say. I promise you, you spend a day doing that, you are going to have four or five conversations. Just the vast majority of them are going to open up in ways you didn't imagine possible.
I really like that. It opens up the door for more information to come out. So there's more data, as you've talked about. My mother-in-law, who I believe had a black belt in small talk, she used to say, tell me more.
Chris, yeah, it's encouraging.
Exactly. Chris, this has been fantastic. You've given us lots of insight into how empathy can be an accelerant and really encouraging us to slow down, be present, and respond not in one course or one way, but be open to responding in a way that's needed in the moment. Thank you so much.
A pleasure was mine. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. To learn more from our spontaneous speaking coaches, listen to our four-part mini-series, episodes 197, 198, 199, and 203. You can also go to fastersmarter.io/spontaneous. This episode was produced by Catherine Reed, Michael Riley, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder. With thanks to Podium Podcast Company, be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter. Please consider our premium offering for extended Deep Thinks episodes, Ask Matt Anythings, and much more at fastersmarter.io/premium. Before we wrap up, I just want to say thank you for listening. It really means a lot to hear how people all over the world are using these ideas in their own lives. It inspires me and the whole team that brings you this show. If you want more episodes and resources, feel free to follow, subscribe, and explore past conversations. We're grateful for your support of Think Fast, Talk Smart.